Okay, get this. Did you know that nearly 14.1 million Americans played outdoor soccer in 2023? Yeah, that's an 8.1% jump just from the year before and a massive 23% rise since 2018.
That's huge. That's like more than double New York City's population playing soccer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild when you think about it like that. Okay, let's unpack this. Today we're doing a deep dive into the U.S. soccer industry, but with a bit of a twist.
Right.
We're actually excluding the professional teams and leagues, because the real sort of hidden story here is this vast booming ecosystem around it. You know, the products, services, technology, all supporting this huge base of players.
A grassroots level.
Precisely. So our mission for you listening in is to give you a shortcut. We want you to be really well informed. We've got through a pretty comprehensive report and pulled out the most important stuff, surprising facts, key consumer insights. Yeah, some really exciting opportunities in this market. So, I mean, if you have 14.1 million Americans lacing up their boots, hitting the field, youth leagues, adult rec, just pickup games.
Right.
What does that massive group actually buy or use? It's clearly, you know, way bigger than just watching the pros on TV.
Oh, it truly is. The U.S. soccer industry, it breaks down into several key verticals, and each one has its own competitive scene, its own financial opportunities. Let's maybe start with coaching and training materials.
Okay.
So this is everything from like official coach education programs, training plans, instructional stuff for player development. You've got the big players like the U.S. Soccer Federation's coaching education. They do the official licenses, run the learning center online.
Right, the official pathway.
Exactly. But then you also have private platforms like Coerver Coaching, the Coaching Manual, and a whole bunch of apps popping up now. Coach Better, Techni Football.
So quite a few options then.
Yeah, it's pretty fragmented, the competition. And partly that's because coaches can go for official licenses or subscription platforms, or honestly, just find tons of free stuff on YouTube or Reddit.
Makes sense.
But the market itself, the overall sports training market, was valued at $27.8 billion in 2023. And it's projected to nearly double, get this, to $50.7 billion by 2035. That's like a 5.2% compound annual growth rate.
Okay, doubling in just over a decade. That's pretty significant growth. But you mentioned coaches often have limited time, tight budgets, and free resources are everywhere. So where's the real opportunity then, despite those hurdles?
That's a great question. I think the opportunity lies in creating really well-curated, age-specific, and importantly, easy-to-implement content, something that goes beyond just, you know, a random collection of
Right,
drills.
like a full program.
Exactly. Something that helps those busy, often volunteer coaches structure a whole season without having to reinvent the wheel every practice. It's about providing premium value that genuinely saves time, even if it costs a bit.
That makes sense. Provide a real solution.
Yeah. And speaking of big markets, apparel is just massive, isn't it? What's the landscape there if we're not talking about the pro team jerseys?
Absolutely. Apparel is enormous and the competition is fierce. It covers everything from performance wear jerseys, shorts, socks, to training gear, footwear, especially cleats, and even, you know, soccer-inspired lifestyle clothes.
Okay.
At the high end, it's really dominated by Nike and Adidas. Their combined revenues, I mean, back in 2018, it was well over $60 billion combined across all sports.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's not just a big number. That translates to enormous financial power for R&D, for marketing. It sets a really high bar for anyone trying to compete in that premium space. Puma and New Balance are definitely in there too, carving out their niches. Competition really focuses on tech, lightweight materials, that kind of thing, and style.
Okay, so that's the top end. What about for, you know, the average youth league
Right,
player?
the value segment. You have brands like Score Sports.
Yeah.
They specifically target that market, budget-friendly uniforms, gear for youth leagues. Their whole message is basically affordable soccer apparel.
And then you've got the big box retailers, think Walmart's Franklin brand or Target's own brands. They offer low-cost options too, and generic manufacturers. Here, competition is all about price and just being accessible for that huge base, those nearly 14 million players who need gear but maybe can't drop $150 on shorts.
So, yeah, that apparel market really is a tale of two cities, isn't it? Elite
Yeah.
performance versus just getting people geared up affordably.
Exactly.
Does that same dynamic apply to the actual equipment? You know, the balls, the goals, the cones. What's the scene for training equipment?
That's a perfect lead-in. Yeah, this vertical includes all that stuff. Soccer balls, goals, cones, agility ladders, protective gear like shin guards. The global football equipment market was already $16.8 billion in 2023.
Okay.
And projected to hit over $20 billion by 2029. So, you know, steady, healthy growth there too. You've got your specialized firms. Quick Goal is really well known for high quality goals and nets. SKLZ focuses more on those innovative training aids you see.
Right, the gadgets.
Yeah. They mostly supply clubs, academies, places that prioritize durability, performance. It's kind of a sign of a seriously invested club if they have Quick Goal stuff. Then, of course, the general sporting goods brands, Nike, Adidas, they make equipment too. Decathlon offers pretty affordable in-house gear, and the big box stores carry a huge range. You can find a premium match quality ball for maybe $150 or a basic recreational one for $15.
Quite the spread.
Definitely. The key differences are innovation. Like Adidas had that smart ball with sensors for overall quality and, of course, price. And one thing we've really seen surge lately is demand for protective gear. Shin guards, especially, driven by more awareness about safety from parents and players.
Yeah, that safety point is huge.
Yeah.
Does that kind of care extend to how teams actually look, you know, their identity through uniforms? Let's talk uniforms and team gear.
Absolutely. This part focuses on the full team kits, jersey, shorts, socks, and the really crucial customization services. We're talking youth clubs, schools, adult leagues.
Right, getting the logos and numbers right.
Right, exactly. The premium kit providers are the big names again. Nike, Adidas, Puma. Also some respected European brands like Umbro and Hummel. They're usually supplied through authorized dealers, and they push advanced fabrics, unique designs. But while they compete hard for those multi-year club contracts, you do hear some criticism sometimes from fans about high prices or maybe using the same template designs across too many teams.
Yeah, the template fatigue.
Right. Then for the value and custom specialists, you've got Score Sports again, Augusta Sportswear, Founder Sport Group. They focus on affordable team packages, bulk pricing, quick turnarounds. Competition here is super intense. Lots of small vendors, online custom shops.
So price and speed are key there.
Totally. Price, durability, and just how easy it is to order. What's really telling is the private equity interest. KKR bought Varsity Brands, a huge uniform provider, for $4.75 billion in 2023.
Wow. Nearly $5 billion.
Yeah. It just shows how consistent and honestly almost recession-proof the demand is from schools and leagues, especially when you hear that stat. Over half of U.S. youth sports parents struggle with the costs. Affordable uniforms are vital to keep kids playing.
The cost statistic is it really grounds this whole conversation, and it perfectly explains that demand for value.
Okay, so we've covered the traditional stuff, but what about the cutting edge? Tell us about technology integration in soccer. This feels like, I don't know, the Wild West sometimes. It really is the fastest moving piece of this puzzle. It covers everything from tracking individual player performance to complex coaching analytics, even fan engagement tools, but filtering down to the amateur levels.
Okay.
So wearable performance trackers devices like the StatSports Apex GPS vests or Catapult Sports vests, these used to be strictly for the pros.
Right. You see them under the jerseys.
Exactly. But now they're trickling down. U.S. Youth Soccer even partnered with StatSports to bring this tech to thousands of their elite youth players. These systems give you incredibly detailed data speed, distance, heart rate. But the cost is still a barrier, often several hundred dollars per player.
Yeah, that adds up fast for a whole team.
It really does. Then in training and analytics software, platforms like Huddle are pretty common in high schools now for breaking down game film. But now you have more advanced AI-powered tools coming in. VO and trace cameras can automatically film games, no camera operator needed.
That's a game changer for coaches.
Huge. And athlete.ai can even auto-generate highlight reels from that footage, also getting more accessible. Then you have management and engagement tools like TeamSnap or League Apps. They just simplify everything, schedules, communication, payments. League Apps actually just got a new round of funding, which again highlights the growth potential in just organizing youth sports.
Right, the logistics side.
Exactly. And finally, there's emerging tech. Things like VR training, think virtual reality goalie simulators or AI coaching platforms like Cupello. It's still pretty new, kind of nascent, but really exciting. Less direct competition right now, but their challenge is proving the real world benefit and making it scalable.
Okay, so summing up these verticals, we've got really intense competition in apparel, moderate to high in the others. But the financial scope across the board is just huge. I mean, the entire U.S. sports equipment and apparel market, all sports, was nearly $150 billion in 2022. That's staggering.
It absolutely is. And the financial opportunity specifically within soccer and capturing this growing base of youth players, it's immense. Soccer apparel and footwear alone globally projected to go from about $28 billion this year to almost $55 billion by 2034. Yep. That's nearly 7% growth year over year consistently. Equipment sees steady growth too, with recurring purchases and people wanting more specialized gear. But yeah, the technology sector really stands out for potential. That online sports coaching and training platform market expected to hit over $1.2 billion globally by 2027, and soccer's a huge driver of that.
So these numbers really paint a picture. This ecosystem, even without the pros, is a serious financial powerhouse, not just a hobby.
Exactly. It signals real investment potential.
That's a powerful takeaway. And speaking of power, it's not just what brands sell, but how you, the consumer, feel about them. The connection. This is where it gets really interesting. Brand positioning and perception. Let's dig into that battle for loyalty, from the elite stuff down to the mass market gear.
Oh, this is absolutely crucial, how brands position themselves and how people perceive that positioning. It often makes or breaks their long-term success. Let's maybe start with soccer footwear, the cleats.
Okay, boots on the ground.
Exactly. So, Nike. Their premium lines, Mercurial, Phantom, Tempo Elite, they're top-priced. They're seen as the innovators, right? Flyknit uppers, lightweight plates, perceived as cutting edge. But you look online, social media, forums, it's a bit more nuanced. Some people talk about copy-paste designs or complain the prices are just too high. I see comments like, Nike kits are so bang average on Reddit sometimes.
Interesting.
But despite that, Nike's financial muscle, we're talking over $5 billion in annual net income, lets them just flood the market with advertising, reinforcing that premium aspirational image.
Right. Then there's Adidas.
Adidas. Similar premium positioning with iconic lines like Predator, Copa. They often get praised for blending that rich soccer heritage with really high quality. Fans often talk about superior design and feel.
Yeah, they have that classic vibe.
They do. And Adidas actively promotes innovation to laceless cleats, their big push into sustainability, using almost all recycled polyester by 2023. That really resonates with environmentally conscious consumers. Financially, they're a giant, over $20 billion in revenue, and they're really pushing to grow their U.S. market share. Then in that mid-tier to high-end space, you've got Puma. Known for speed cleats like the Ultra, they're definitely growing in the U.S., often a little bit cheaper than the absolute top-end Nike or Adidas. New Balance makes really high-quality cleats, sometimes seen as the underdog, but consistently gets good reviews for comfort and style. Under Armour, well, they're kind of a minor player in soccer, don't really have a strong cleat identity that grabs players.
Okay. And what about the really cheap stuff? The let's call them value cleats.
Right. The $20, $40 pairs maybe from brands like Dream Pairs or just generic models you find online, compared to $250 plus for the elite stuff.
Yeah.
Customer reviews are often like, hey, surprisingly good for the price. But durability is the big recurring theme. People complain they fall apart. Like that Reddit comment. You're not going to find durable cleats under $30. Probably last a season at most. They fill that crucial affordability need. But nobody expects top performance or longevity.
That distinction is crystal clear. You pay for performance or you pay for access. Usually not both.
Yeah.
How does this play out with apparel and uniforms? Same kind of dynamic.
Very much so. Again, Nike and Adidas are top tier for high-end kits. They outfit the elite youth club's top high schoolers. Wearing their brand can even be, you know, a recruitment tool for some programs.
Right, the badge appeal.
Exactly. But while people respect the fabric, tech, and the style, you do hear that criticism about Nike using the same templates too often, maybe lacking creativity. Other brands like Hummel from Denmark or Umbro from the UK, they have this niche high-end appeal. They often get praised for quality and more unique designs, kind of contrasting with what some see as Nike's generic approach.
Interesting. And the value side for uniforms?
For value uniform providers, Score Sports is probably the most recognized name. They're known for inexpensive, durable uniforms, specifically for youth leagues. Organizers really appreciate the price to value. You can get complete sets for a fraction of the high-end cost. Their perception is really utilitarian, reliable, cost-effective, gets the job done for the team.
Okay. And equipment brands, like Goals or training cones?
Yeah. Moving to training equipment brands, Quit a Goal is definitely seen as high-end, respected for safety, longevity. Having their goals or benches, like I said, it's often seen as a mark of a well-funded club.
Right.
SKLZ and Quick Play are popular for all those training gadgets, agility ladders, hurdles, rebounders. Generally praised for thoughtful designs, but they do face competition from cheaper knockoffs. Serious coaches, though, tend to stick with the known brands for quality assurance.
And soccer balls.
For ball manufacturers, Adidas and Nike dominate the match quality ball segment, you know, the expensive ones. Select, the Danish brand, has a really good reputation for high-quality training balls and futsal balls, often at a slightly better price point. And then the bargain balls, under $20 Voigt, Mikasa, they're entry-level. Fine for the backyard, but probably lack consistent flight or feel.
Gotcha. And finally, the tech brands. How are they perceived?
For soccer tech brands, StatSports and Catapult are definitely positioned as the elite performance tools, praised for the incredibly detailed data they provide. When youth academies adopt them, it's seen as genuinely forward-thinking, a sign they're serious about player development.
Right, adopting pro methods.
Exactly. Coaching apps like Coach Better or TechNade, they're subscription-based, maybe $10, $20 a month. They target serious youth coaches with curated drills and session plans. And the video and analytics platform's Hurdle is well-established. But the newer AI tools like Athlete.ai, they're seen as potential game changers, especially for recruiting, because they can automatically create those highlight reels players need.
Okay, so after laying all that out, what does this whole picture of brand perception really mean for you, the consumer, and for the brands trying to reach you?
Well, it means the high-end brands, your Nikes and Adidas's, they get praised for quality, for innovation, but they definitely face criticism sometimes for being too expensive or maybe getting a bit complacent with design.
Right.
On the other hand, the low-end brands play a crucial role in making the sport accessible, democratizing it. But everyone knows the deal you expect, lower durability, lower performance. It's that constant trade-off conversation you hear among players and parents.
That phrase you mentioned, cheap and durable, pick one.
Exactly. That sentiment really echoes across all the inexpensive gear. Conversely, with premium stuff, reviews often debate if the performance truly justifies the huge price tag. You hear people say you can get 90% of the performance for half the price with a good mid-tier option. Mm-hmm. And while Nike and Adidas absolutely dominate visibility, especially on social media with their big star endorsements. If you listen to grassroots conversations, online forums, sidelines, a lot of the talk centers on value. Especially in this massive American youth market, remember, about 3 million kids registered just in U.S. youth soccer.
That's a huge number needing gear.
It is. So financially, high-end is more profitable per item sold, obviously, but the low-end thrives on sheer volume, catering to that huge base.
That really highlights that tension, doesn't it, between aspiration and just basic accessibility, which leads perfectly into the next question. What are people actually saying day-to-day about playing, about buying gear? Let's get into the consumer sentiment analysis.
Yeah, this is where you hear the real voice of the community. And the single most pervasive sentiment, especially among American soccer parents and players, is definitely about the cost of participation.
That's surprising, but still important.
Right. Over half of U.S. families openly say they struggle to afford youth sports costs. And soccer, maybe surprisingly to some, is actually one of the costliest youth sports out there. The average annual spend is around $11,188 per child.
Wow. Nearly $1,200 a year per kid.
Yeah. And you see this reflected online constantly. Social media, forums, parents lamenting the pay-to-play system. They worry that expensive club fees, travel, top-tier gear, it just excludes talented kids who can't afford it. You see heartbreaking comments about middle-class and poor kids ditching youth sports altogether because of cost.
That's tough to hear.
It is. But the flip side is programs that actively try to address this scholarship funds, used equipment swaps, pay-what-you-can models like that DCX iClub in DC, they get huge goodwill and approval. It shows there's a real hunger for solutions.
Definitely. What about the gear itself, the quality versus price debate?
Well, you see high satisfaction when premium products really deliver. People will say they're worth every penny if a top-line cleat or ball performs exceptionally well and lasts. But if one of those expensive items fails, oh, that trust evaporates fast and people get very vocal online.
Right, the backlash is quick.
Very. On the other side, there's this real surprise and delight you see when cheap products overdeliver. You know, a $30 no-name cleat lasts the whole season. Those kinds of grassroots endorsements can give a huge boost to lesser-known brands.
Yeah, the hidden gem effect.
Exactly. But then there's the disappointment with false economy. When the bargain gear fails quickly, people vent online. You get what you pay for. It reinforces that idea that maybe investing just a bit more in mid-range stuff often pays off. Or the really savvy consumers look for last season's high-end models on clearance. Best of both worlds.
Smart. How does brand loyalty and public image shake out in consumer comments?
Okay, so Nike commands really strong loyalty, especially with younger players who are influenced by the big star endorsers. But you also hear that fatigue. We mentioned complaints about high prices, maybe designs feeling a bit uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Adidas generally enjoys a really strong heritage soccer brand image. People praise the classic designs, but also the innovation, especially their sustainability efforts with recycled materials. That resonates. Their ties to big tournaments and clubs also create positive associations.
Right.
Smaller brands like Puma or Umbro, they often have these really passionate, almost cult followings. People appreciate their unique designs or quality. Puma's recent stuff has been getting good buzz for comfort and style. Under Armour tends to be pretty neutral to slightly negative in soccer-specific discussions, often just overlooked. And the local or value brands, like Score Sports, they're appreciated by league organizers for reliability and cost. But you don't usually see strong end-user brand love. They're practical, not aspirational.
Got it. Any specific products that generate strong feelings?
Yeah, a few product-specific sentiments stand out. High-end mash balls, like the official MLS ball or the World Cup ball, people praise the performance, but often say they're just too expensive, maybe $165 for everyday players or teams.
Yeah, nobody wants to lose that in the bushes.
Exactly. There. Mid-range balls, though, maybe $30 to $60. Very positive sentiment there. People feel they strike a great balance of quality, durability, true flight, good value. For protective gear, shin guards are pretty straightforward. Comfortable and protective gets praise. Stiff and bulky gets complaints. Headgear is more mixed. Some parents insist on it for safety. Others find it cumbersome or question its effectiveness. There's definitely an opportunity there for a brand that can clearly demonstrate both protection and comfort.
Makes sense, especially with concussion concerns.
Absolutely. And for technology products, sentiment really hinges on user friendliness. Early adopters are usually positive if the tech delivers the insights it promises without being a headache to use. But if devices break easily or the software is buggy, the online backlash is immediate and harsh. And there's also that underlying kind of tangential concern you sometimes hear about treating kids like pros too soon or privacy issues with collecting so much data on young players.
Interesting nuance there.
Yeah. And just generally, as soccer grows in popularity, the gear itself is becoming more mainstream, more cool. It's gaining fashion cachet off the field, too.
That's fascinating. So overall, consumers are passionate, but practical concerns about cost and quality are always there. Brands that hit that sweet spot of value get rewarded. Those that miss face the music. The voice of the consumer is definitely loud.
Extremely loud.
So connecting all this, knowing what people want, what they complain about, where are the biggest opportunities? Where can innovation meet these needs? Let's talk market gaps and strategic opportunities.
Okay, yeah. Based on everything we've discussed, several clear unmet needs and strategic opportunities pop out. First, there's a really significant gap for affordable quality gear.
The holy grail.
Pretty much. Truly durable cleats under $30, for example, are like unicorns. So a strategic play is developing gear that's no frills, high durability, maybe using slightly older tech, less flashy materials, but focusing on solid construction.
Built to last, not necessarily to impress.
Exactly. This would directly appeal to those budget-conscious clubs and families. And remember that stat. Kids from low-income homes quit sports at 6 times the rate of wealthier kids, mostly due to cost. So addressing this isn't just a business opportunity. It could genuinely help keep more kids playing.
That's a powerful motivator. What else?
Next, youth coaching resources for the grassroots. So many recreational and school coaches lack access to high-quality, easy-to-use training materials. They end up just searching online, piecing things together.
Or the volunteer dad coach scrambling for drills.
Precisely. So a clear opportunity is a low-cost, maybe even freemium coaching app or online platform. Tailored specifically for American youth soccer, with curated age-appropriate practice plans, maybe short videos, partnering with organizations like YMCAs could be a great way to reach those coaches.
Yeah, make it super accessible.
Third, customized and on-demand uniforms. Ordering kits can be a real pain for smaller clubs, slow, expensive, high minimum orders.
The customization headache?
Totally. So the opportunity is to invest in an on-demand production platform. using modern tech like sublimation printing, maybe even 3D printing for logos, allow teams to configure unique designs online and promise quick turnarounds, like say 2-week delivery. This taps into that desire for individuality that the big brands sometimes miss with templates.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. What about tech for the masses?
Right, integration of technology at the grassroots, those high-tech wearables, the AI video analysis. They're mostly for elite clubs right now, too expensive for average teams.
Yeah, democratizing the data.
Exactly. So strategic plays could be developing lower cost tech, maybe smartphone apps, using the phone's own sensors for basic tracking, or simple wearables under $50, or offering the expensive tech as a service like renting VO cameras on a subscription basis, making data accessible to mid-tier programs, even individual players wanting to improve.
Interesting models. Anything else stand out?
Yes, definitely enhanced female-specific products. Girls and women are a huge and growing part of soccer. 45% of new fans are female. But there's still a need for better-fitting women's cut uniforms, cleats designed specifically for female foot shapes, maybe even training gear considering female physiology.
Like addressing ACL injury risks.
Precisely. Investing in R&D there, designing footwear that might help mitigate those higher risks, that's a massive opportunity. Brands that genuinely commit to the women's game can capture a really loyal and growing market.
Makes total sense. Two more.
Yep. Sustainable and eco-friendly soccer products. There's a growing demand from consumers who care about the environment.
The green factor.
Yeah. So launching a line of green gear, maybe youth league uniforms from 100% recycled fibers or recyclable soccer balls, promoting the environmental benefits. While cost can sometimes be a hurdle, a growing number of people are willing to pay a bit more for sustainable options.
Good point. And the last one.
Expanded training for underserved areas. Think rural communities or low-income urban neighborhoods. They often lack access to advanced coaching, good facilities, specialized equipment.
Bringing the game to them.
Exactly. Maybe mobile training units, pop-up soccer academies, initiatives that bring quality coaching and sports science to these communities. This taps into unmet demand, builds incredible goodwill for the brand, and could even develop entirely new markets long-term.
There's a fantastic list. It really highlights where demand is surging, but supply hasn't quite caught up.
Yeah.
And yeah, so many of these also just make soccer better and more accessible for everyone. Okay, let's shift to the big picture financials, financial scope and future trends. How do all these pieces fit into the money side of U.S. soccer and what's coming down the road?
All right, the financial landscape is definitely robust and the future looks really strong. If we look at the revenue of major brands, Nike's overall revenue was over $51 billion in FY 2023. Soccer is a huge category for them, billions in profit. That financial strength fuels everything, R&D, marketing.
Massive scale.
Huge. Adidas reported around $24 billion in revenue in 2022. Soccer is absolutely core to their identity. They sponsor the World Cup, major leagues, and they're actively working to grow their U.S. share, already up to nearly 9% recently.
They're pushing hard.
They are. Puma's around $9 billion globally in 2022, growing fast in the U.S., signing players, positioning themselves as that strong number three. Under Armour, like we said, big company overall, but not a major moneymaker specifically in soccer. And then your domestic companies like Score Sports, they're private, but likely have very stable multi-million dollar revenues from outfitting countless youth leagues year after year.
Okay, so the big players are huge. What about overall industry growth?
The projected growth is really exciting. It's driven by participation. Youth soccer numbers keep climbing. And 2/3 of players are under 25. That's a built-in consumer base for years.
The pipeline.
Exactly. Plus, the 2026 World Cup here in North America, everyone expects that to just ignite a massive surge in interest and spending across everything we've talked about.
The World Cup effect.
Totally. Market forecasts are really bullish. Global soccer sportswear projected to nearly double from $28 billion now to almost $55 billion by 2034. That's almost 7% growth every year. The U.S. ball sports market generally is growing around 4.3% annually. The whole U.S. youth sports industry is valued around $19 billion and climbing, with soccer taking a big slice. And that tech segment within sports. Rapid growth projected there, wearables, video analysis.
The momentum is clearly there.
Unmistakably. It points to a really dynamic, evolving market that's attracting serious attention, which leads to investment and consolidation.
Right. The money follows the growth.
Exactly. We'll probably see more consolidation in those fragmented areas, like uniform suppliers. Remember KKR buying Varsity Brands? Expect more deals like that. Franchise youth training programs like Soccer Shots, they're expanding like crazy. It's a scalable model investors like. And definitely expect more venture capital flowing into soccer tech, building on investments like the one League Apps got.
Okay, so money flowing in.
Yeah.
What about emerging trends shaping the actual future of the game and the gear?
Several key trends. Data-driven training is going to keep filtering down. By 2030, it wouldn't be surprising if mid-level clubs are commonly tracking player stats with wearables and using AI to analyze game footage.
Making data standard practice.
Pretty much. E-commerce and customization will just keep growing. Brands have to compete online, investing in easy-to-use customization tools and fast delivery. And social media trends can genuinely cause product sales to spike almost overnight. Health and safety emphasis will definitely drive product development. Expect more focus on better head protection because of concussion awareness, improved footwear designed to reduce common injuries. We already see this driving demand for protective gear.
Safety first.
Absolutely. And finally, sustainability and social responsibility. Consumer demand for eco-friendly practices is growing. Adidas aiming for only recycled polyester is a big signal. We might see green certifications become a selling point. Clubs might even start preferring suppliers with strong sustainability creds. These social aspects really influence brand perception now.
So lots of potential investment areas, too, based on those trends.
Definitely. Youth development companies, digital platforms like training apps or marketplaces, niche product innovators, maybe the next generation smart ball, and even just building more facilities, soccer complexes, all growth areas.
It really feels like tradition and modern trends are converging in a powerful way in U.S. soccer right now.
That's a great way to put it.
So wrapping this deep dive up, the main takeaway seems to be that the U.S. soccer industry, beyond the pros, is just surging, driven by more people playing and some really cool innovation. Success looks like balancing making it accessible while also offering cutting-edge solutions.
Precisely. The winning strategies really involve making soccer more affordable for everyone, smartly leveraging technology and data for real benefits, and building brands that genuinely connect with soccer culture and its values, both old and new. If businesses can address those market gaps we talked about, they can really tap into this incredibly passionate community and ride this major growth wave.
So as you go about your day, here's something to think about. With the World Cup on the horizon and youth participation soaring, how will you engage with this pivotal moment for American soccer? Will you be a more discerning consumer, maybe an innovator spotting one of these gaps, or simply a passionate fan helping shape the sport's future accessibility and appeal?